Today, Tuesday, May 5th, has been dubbed Giving Tuesday Now, a day to raise awareness and support for struggling nonprofits across the U.S. during this COVID-19 crisis. KBOO can use your support as we try to make up for having had to cancel our spring membership drive. If you donate online at kboo.fm today, your donation will be matched up to $20,000. So please, go to our website and support this community radio station. Again, kboo.fm. This morning, we're hosting a Giving Tuesday special featuring nonprofit organizers talking about their strife and triumphs through the crisis of COVID-19. We're happy to have representatives from a number of local nonprofits. We'll hear from Street Roots, the VOES, Workers' Rights and Education Project, APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, Unite Oregon, which works with immigrants and refugees in the state, and the Municipal Eco-Resiliency Project, working for food justice and sovereignty. Stay tuned this hour for Giving Tuesday Now. Solidarity.
Nobody likes to ask for money. Nobody likes to play the clown. Nobody likes to wait in a long line. Nobody likes being pushed around. Everybody wants a family protected.
I am joined now by Marvin Pena, who is the Grassroots Engagement Coordinator at VOES, the Workers' Rights Education Project. If you have ever been on Martin Luther King Avenue in Southeast Portland, you've probably seen VOES, the Workers' Rights Education Project. It's a place where people can hire people to do labor, to do some work of different kinds, and it's supportive of immigrant rights and of workers' rights. Marvin, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you for giving me some room and give the organization some you know, audience and time to spread the word about the work we're doing and how people can support a community that's one of the most vulnerable ones out there right now, and especially during these challenging times.
Of course, of course. So if you can talk a little bit about what are some of the challenges that's been that have been faced by the workers that that work with VOES during this time of COVID-19. I think our listeners would appreciate hearing what some of these workers are going through right now.
Sure. Just a brief summary, a little bit about VOES. Basically, for those and the people listening, VOES is an organization who advocates for workers and immigrant rights, and we serve a population that many times has no other place to go for many reasons, and we are like a safe space for them to go and not just look for work, but also look for resources, and we provide some other things like ESL classes, workforce development, and right now we kind of shift our, you know, regular work to support them in other ways. And just answering to your question about the challenges, these are challenges that has been there all this time, but now they have gotten worse. And one of them is the access to housing, access to, you know, a stable income, access to food, and also like transportation. I mean, there are so many of these issues. These are like the main ones. And these are issues that they're facing due to, you know, language barriers, immigration status, like so many other different barriers that they face due to the just the nature of their situation. During this COVID-19 crisis, one of the main things we have been supporting workers has been with food security and trying to provide some food, whatever we can, you know, get from donations and any other individuals out there who wants to, you know, donate food that is already prepared. But also we have been, you know, supporting with a small money amounts for them to use it for things like, you know, cell phone bills, a little bit for rent, a little bit for food, depending on their needs. And that's the reason we started like a GoFundMe campaign to, you know, provide some kind of support, because many of them won't receive any kind of, you know, financial aid from the government. So this is a way that can, you know, get them some at least. Yeah.
I know during the debate over the stimulus package and the stimulus package that was passed, it did not include support for workers who are undocumented. It also excluded spouses of people who are immigrants that are currently in process or are undocumented, and excluded the children of those immigrants from receiving a stimulus package. So these workers are, I think, some of the most vulnerable and the most impacted. When you talk about the impact of COVID, the COVID-19 crisis on these workers, what's been the biggest thing as far as work? Are people not able to get the work that they usually do? I know a lot of times people from VOS were hired by homeowners to do you know, carpentry and other things.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, that has been like the main impact in terms of the income that they receive, because this is this is the only source of income that they have. And as you mentioned, people who hire day laborers are people from the community who not just need some work done, but also believe in the mission of, you know, giving people chances and opportunities through work. And so that has been reduced greatly. We still, even though we're quote unquote close, I mean, we basically just closed the gates, just following CDC and governor's like guidelines in terms of social distancing, but we're still, you know, sending people to work, dispatching, and you can still hire people through the website. But due to the COVID-19, it has been hard because so many people, you know, they're sheltered in place, but also they're afraid about the social distancing part of it. And I'm sure most of them have kids at home. So it's challenging, even though we have been not just providing information to workers and educate them about, you know, all the guidelines and the best practices, if you will, but also we have been providing like masks or gloves to kind of try to work on that side too, in order to, you know, let the people know in the community that we are doing the best we can to keep the guidelines and follow those, but also try to support this community, because the amount of work that, you know, it has been reduced by a lot, like basically 1 to 2 people a day. Some days no one goes out to work. And especially during this time where people are getting ready for spring and, you know, doing a lot of yard work, none of that is happening, or little at the most.
If people are interested in hiring a worker from VOS to do any kind of work, what are the types of workers that are available, and how can people connect with VOS to do that hiring?
Of course. And thank you for that, for, you know, offering that support and spreading the word through KBOO. And thank you again for the opportunity. So the best way, if you go to the website, which is portlandvoz.org, portlandvoz.org, on the menu it says hire a worker, so it can guide you through how to hire a worker and where to call. You can do it online, and also you can call to the worker center, and we're still working from 7 to around 11 in the morning. You can call at the worker center, and the phone number for that is 503-234-2043. Again, 503-234-2043. And this is the number for the worker center. Feel free to call. There's staff there that can support you with any questions that you might have about how to hire, but also through the website you can do it, you know, keeping the social distancing and, you know, but any questions, honestly, that you have, you can call to the worker center, and definitely it's going to be answered.
VOS is doing support for the workers through both a donation campaign, Emergency Solidarity Fund, and people, I understand, can also donate clothing and non-perishable foods. Can you talk a little bit about that and how people can support the workers?
Yes. There are quite a few ways that people can support. Right now, the way that the few ways that we have is, one, if you go to the website, again, portlandvoz.org, right there, the homepage, there is a link for how to support Voz and workers during COVID-19. And there are three main ways. One is donating to Voz, the organization as a whole. As many of the nonprofits, it's the same. We are facing like challenges in how to fundraise money, how to apply for grants. I mean, the amount of money is not enough out there for all the organizations to apply. So it has been challenging, which compromises, you know, even the regular functioning of the organization. So we need to adapt, reduce hours, like do all these kind of things to still be working and supporting workers. So you can donate directly to the organization, but also you will find a link for an emergency fund for the workers. And this is a GoFundMe campaign where all the money donated to this fund will go straight to the workers, and we are providing regularly money for the workers. We have keeping track who we have been supporting, and then, you know, to try to kind of spread this as evenly as possible and helping and supporting as many workers as we can. So this money goes straight to the workers. And that helps, as I mentioned at the beginning, like for, you know, cell phone bills, rent, some food, some medicine, and any other need that they might have. And the other one, we have a list of items that people can donate to support workers. And food is the main one, non-perishable food. We have a list of things that we are receiving, and what we're doing with that, we're getting like all this food and creating bags to distribute to the workers. As of last Saturday, we have given away 90 bags with food and, you know, some toiletries to different workers. Also, some of those who needed the most, we have been delivering those bags or boxes to their houses or to the place that they're living. Hopefully we can receive more, like maybe camping gear, like, you know, tents or sleeping bags, because a few of them, they cannot even get to the shelter, so they need to sleep outside. So this will be helpful for them to have. I mean, the list is over there. Again, if you go to our website, portlandvoz.org, you can see there is a link there and it gives you these three options on how to support us during these challenging times.
And people can bring these items from 7 to 11 a.m. Monday through Saturday, it looks like, 240 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, the Voz Center.
Yeah.
And yes, we'll have all this info on our website, kbu.fm, if you look there under the Giving Tuesday special. So you can find those links there as well.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's huge. That's what we're relying on, like in community support. Like, we have been a grassroots organization for, well, almost 20 years now. And we have been always being, you know, supported greatly by the community in Portland, and we want to spend that as much as possible. And this is the time that we want to see that come through and have more community members supporting us.
Yeah, I think one of the things that has come out as a positive in the midst of all of this this horror around COVID-19 is the solidarity and people coming together and helping each other in the community.
Yeah, that's true. And people reaching out, and not just like the people that we as an organization have been trying to reach out, but a lot of other, like the faith community has been reaching out to us as well. and individuals and other organizations from other nonprofits that works like with food. They have been reaching out to us as well to support the community and the workers in this case. So that's an awesome thing that I don't think that we learned it in these times, but it just came up even more during these challenging times.
Well, and I just really want to thank you for joining us on this special program for Giving Tuesday Now. We're speaking with Marvin Pena, who is the Grassroots Engagement Coordinator at the VOES Worker Rights Education Project. Again, their website is portlandvoz.org. That's portlandvoz.org. Thank you, Marvin, for joining us on KBOO today.
Yeah, thank you, Yankee, for calling, and hope for the best, and take care of you guys and stay healthy.
And this is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO Radio.
Solidarity. Solidarity. Solidarity,
oh yeah,
solidarity, 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 solidarity.
We are joined now by Duncan Wang, who is with APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. And I wonder if you could just first start by telling us about APANO and the work that you do, and then we can talk about some of the impacts of COVID-19 on your organization.
Sure, yeah. So we serve Oregon's fast-growing Asian Pacific Islander community. We do a lot of community organizing, leadership development, cultural work, and community development. And I think, you know, COVID has been really hitting our community particularly hard. We've actually started working on COVID since January due to a lot of the fear and misplaced xenophobia that kind of was targeting Asian American-owned businesses, many of which saw like greatly reduced business for months before the March order. And yeah, I think we've really had to retool our organization. So we've been working on supporting small businesses with grant funding and also filling out SBA loan docs. We have a workers relief fund, which has raised about $90,000 to support impacted workers that have been laid off or furloughed because of COVID. And we're doing a lot to combat hateful narratives around Asian Americans. You know, I think the DOJ had a report that came out that showed a 366% increase in hate-related incidents related to COVID in the last couple months. So, yeah, we kind of retooled our whole organization to respond to these.
Wow. So a lot of impact from the hate crimes across the country. Has that been something that that has been happening here in Oregon? Have you had any cases?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had, physical acts of violence, but there's just been a marked increase in, microaggressions and, incidents like that. Like, we have one of our staff that was at a grocery store and a person in combat fatigues came up to her and told her that she should die. A lot of incidents like that that were very kind of like hateful and distressing.
Wow. Is there a way that community members can report if things like that are going on?
There's two great resources. There's the Portland United Against Hate website where you can report those incidents, and then the Department of Justice at the State of Oregon has a website as well. So both are great ways to kind of report and keep track of instances like that.
Right. And I noticed that you talk specifically about how in this Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, you're focusing on women leaders and that women all over the globe are disproportionately affected by this crisis. And I wonder, could you talk a little bit more about that and particularly how it's impacting API women?
I think, women in color are kind of just in the disproportionately represented in the most kind of essential roles, both in terms of like being childcare providers or working in grocery stores or in the medical field. So I think, folks are just being disproportionately impacted, being exposed to additional risk, often for, not any increases in compensation, and in many cases also just kind of being laid off. So I think we really wanted to highlight the contributions of, APAC women in particular, to obvious essential roles, and also kind of bring attention to kind of what their experiences are and also, how they're contributing and how we can all support them.
And one of the things I noticed your organization is doing is putting together webinars, Courage During COVID. Maybe you could share some information about that in case people are interested.
The first one is Tuesday evening. I think one of the things that we really, realized was frontline workers and folks of color are really kind of bearing the emotional brunt of a lot of this, and wanted to create a space for folks to come together and talk about it and get some tools and to improve community resilience. Our last workshop had like kind of a mental health professional come in and talk about how to do kind of healing. So I think, it's impacting everyone from kind of folks on the front line to just, folks that are, online and on Zoom every day. I think it's all taking a toll. So yeah, I just wanted to create space for folks to come there and talk about it and maintain those social connections.
This is a BIPOC only space. Can you explain that and who would be, would benefit from taking part in this webinar?
Sure. Yeah, it's open for Black, Indigenous, people of color. And I think anyone that really just wants to, come together and talk about what they're experiencing what we can all do about it would be, great additions to the space.
And just before we finish, I want to go back to the bias incidents and hate crimes that are going on. And you've got a guide on your website, Resilience to Hate, a resource guide, working with Portland United Against Hate. And I wonder if you could just explain a little more, what is a bias incident? How can people recognize it and how can people respond?
Gosh, yeah, I mean, I think it just runs the whole gamut, and the pandemic has really kind of brought, the best and worst out of people. So it might be kind of incidents where folks that may not know are trying to be funny and referring to things as like the Wu flu or the Chinese virus or the Kung flu. I think those are kind of in jest oftentimes, but really kind of feed into this national rhetoric that is really kind of creating dangerous social settings for a lot of people in the Asian American community, and then it might escalate to kind of verbal threats, and we've been hearing a lot more about those kind of amongst our staff and community, of folks just being kind of harassed at the stores, and then finally kind of direct physical violence that, if you Google, you can see it has been also, rapidly increasing across the country. So I think, something that we're thinking a lot about is how, Asian Americans kind of were held up as a model minority, and there was this model minority myth at play in a lot of our, decision-making, as a society, but now shifting pretty rapidly to this traditional like yellow peril narrative. So kind of just like really grappling with that. And then also, I think that we're really just talking about this in the Asian American setting because of COVID, but recognizing that a lot of these microaggressions and hate crimes are targeted at Black and Brown communities pretty much on a regular. And it's really just now that it's starting to like impact the Asian American community more. So I think, how do we all work together and stand in solidarity and protect one another is really at the top of our mind.
And again, if people do experience something like this or witness an incident, report hate PDX org is a place to confidentially report incidents of hate, and that is, then those statistics are used, and how else are those incidents responded to when they're reported?
I think it just depends on the type of incident. You know, I think if it rises to a discriminatory level, like if a shopkeeper won't serve, you know, someone in a certain community, you know, like that would be elevated to the Bureau of Labor and Industry. You know, if it's like a straight up like physical assault, that would be a crime and would be reported to law enforcement. So I think overall, it just really depends on the type of incident. But the most important thing is just to really keep track of these in one central place to see kind of like where things are headed, what the trends are, and, you know, how pervasive it is.
I really want to thank you for joining us. Again, we've been speaking with Duncan Huang with the APANO organization, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. Again, that website, apano.org, APANO.org. And again, we've been speaking with Duncan Huang with the organization, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. Por cantar, ni por tener buen amor. Canto porque la guitarra tiene sentido y razón, tiene corazón de tierra y alas de palomita, es como el agua bendita, santigua gloria si veas.
This morning, we're hosting a Giving Tuesday special featuring nonprofit organizers talking about their strife and triumphs through the crisis of COVID-19. We're happy to have representatives from a number of local nonprofits. We'll hear from Street Roots, the VOES, Workers' Rights and Education Project, APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, Unite Oregon, which works with immigrants and refugees in the state, and the Municipal Eco-Resiliency Project, working for food justice and sovereignty. Ni cosa que se parezca, mi canto es de los andarios para alcanzar las estrellas. Que el canto tiene sentido cuando palpiten las venas.
We are joined this morning by Antonio Zamora, who is one of the founders of the Municipal Eco-Resiliency Project, known by the acronym MERP. And Antonio, I wonder if you could start by telling us a little bit about this project and the call that you put out on May Day for support for this food justice project in the Portland area.
Yeah, the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project is about expanding grassroots power, collaborating with marginalized communities or impacted communities to attain sustainable resources for us to meet the scales of the problems posed by climate change. MERP is a working project of Symbiosis PDX. Symbiosis PDX is a greater movement of municipal municipal movements across the Americas. So that goes from Portland, obviously, all the way across the East Coast down to Mexico and beyond. So that's basically Symbiosis is a co-confederation movement of municipalist projects across the Americas.
And when you talk about municipal eco-resiliency, you're talking about neighbors taking care of each other, people growing food. Can you talk a little bit more about that concept?
Well, really the concept has like inspired me out of climate justice activism. So as a person concerned about climate change, I try to focus on municipal eco-resiliency, which itself is inspired by how Cuba back in the 90s experienced something they call or recognize as the special period, where they were forced to reinvent the will of living. And so what they did basically is massive urban farming on a scale that really helped them move along in their crisis with the oil problems, that, you know, the embargo that was placed upon them by the United States. So they're really like the overview and the great example what all of us must do in the next 10 years, which I recognize as the 10 years of May Day from 2020 till 2030, because according to the science and how we're living on the earth is very questionable by the time if we don't make a just transition from now until 2030. I feel like we can't wait on big NGO, big government, and maybe even small government to solve the crises with food, fuel, and climate. So the people will have to do it house by house, eco-villages by eco-villages, and block by block. Everyone living in the Portland area is a potential participant of MERP. And even me as a participant, a founding participant of the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project, there's so many opportunities for people to plug in. Everyone in the city lives either in an apartment. There's potential to organize your neighbors in apartment complexes to grow food, to sustain food, and to create a network quite larger than what we ordinarily see with garden culture in Portland. Garden culture in Portland is based on home ownership mostly, or just kind of like, you know, the cute project, but not really, really facing the real reality of food inequality as a greater whole, and how it's also connected to food, how it's also connected to climate. Climate is really harmed by big agriculture as much as it is harmed by the fossil fuel industry.
Right now, we're facing this crisis of a global pandemic. One of the aspects that has been pretty inspiring and actually bringing people together has been some of the mutual aid projects that have gone on in the wake of this global pandemic. Do you see your project, Municipal Eco Resiliency Project, as part of this mutual aid effort where people are facing this crisis together, trying to come together and help each other? And how can people do that in this time of COVID-19?
Yeah, really, COVID-19 was like a really pushing point for a lot of things in this economic system. But it really wasn't COVID-19 that pushed us over this far. It was really the artificial swamp of capitalism. And so what we need to do during this time is use this time during this pandemic to perhaps alternate how we do things differently for the future. Definitely think about how we are going to be living in the future for the next seven generations. Every person in Portland is a potential participant of MERP. So if we think about how we can create our own municipal supply chain with urban agriculture, then we could probably see a longer lasting organizing project than just how we see not only with people responding to COVID-19, but perhaps beyond, during and beyond COVID-19, if people really want to build a massive infrastructure for urban farming right now.
And you were an activist and part of the Occupy Portland movement in 2010. And then in 2018, Occupy ICE that reclaimed some land right next to the ICE building, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement building on Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland, and turned it into a temporary autonomous zone. What are some of the lessons learned from those two Occupy movements for what we're facing right now?
Those are really interesting questions about movement building and how to go past and use critical mass once you achieve critical mass or critical awareness. So yeah, the lessons I have learned is perhaps like join an organization. If you're not part of an organization now, join an organization. So if those situations do happen, hopefully those organizations on a community level are communicating in advance, so we won't have to repeat some of the reoccurring issues with what we supposedly say occupation, but really is like a temporarily autonomous zone. So, or AKA TAZ. So that's one suggestion I think would be a wise thing to do if people were interested. Definitely joining the Municipal Equity Resiliency Project is a good way to kind of like potentially surpass some of those recurrent issues, such as like who, like the, you know, not having, just building community in advance basically. So joining an organization will definitely help mitigate some issues with people not being part of community, and definitely trying to be, you know, open up space so people can join an organization to build community in advance too, such as an occupation.
The Occupy Portland and then again Occupy ICE drew people away from mediated interactions that we had gotten so used to, and actually had people in face-to-face communication and community. Right now, it's really hard to do that. So how are you able to organize when face-to-face meetings, protests, and gatherings are not possible?
Well, right now, as a community supporter or organizer with for the People Organization, I am not encouraging manifestations in the streets for community organizing. But as a participant of MERP, I am encouraging people to grow food, join the cause. Right now we have a 1,000 container garden challenge to have starts available for people during the month of May, and hopefully during the month of hopefully during the season of summer. So when summer's here, we'll definitely have a lot of starts available for people, potentially and hopefully organize in working with impacted communities the most. So if you want to join a garden challenge, like that silly bucket challenge, is probably, well, it was a pretty important challenge for people to do a bucket challenge. That thing was interesting, but it got a lot of people interested. So yeah, basically if people who want to participate with MERP, we are asking for like any non-toxic containers so we can use those to grow some starts for the community, vegetables specifically.
And so what you're doing is you are planting seeds, growing gardens, helping people with their backyard gardens, and then the next step is to provide food for the community once everything gets growing?
Yeah, exactly. So if people want to participate with MERP, so that what that looks like again is like, if you want to host as many starts as you want, then definitely contact MERP at the Gmail, merppdx@gmail.com. Because if you want to host, say, one container of a plant, then we can send you one. But preferably, if you can host up to five, that'd be great. If you live in an apartment building, this is a great opportunity because you could host up to like three or five plants. If you have a big backyard, consider hosting up to 10 plants. So if you have connections to neighbors, have them consider talking about this idea so that MERP, the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project, can communicate with you to have you host several starts in your backyard for your neighbors, for your people who are most impacted by COVID-19, and together maybe as we exercise this project, we can potentially demonstrate other projects into the future after COVID-19.
Great. And the website, I know that you've got the email address, merppdx@gmail.com. I know you're also on Facebook with that facebook.com/merppdx. That's Municipal Eco Resiliency Project, PDX for Portland, merppdx. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Antonio Zamora is with the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project, MERP, here in the Portland area, a group that started last October and is working on bringing food justice and sustainability to the city of Portland and beyond. Antonio, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anyone and everyone living as residents of Portland, Oregon, please consider joining together with the Municipal Eco Resiliency Project. And let's definitely grow and build a really amazing agricultural or non-agricultural, but definitely a big urban farm movement for social justice and everything after COVID-19.
Joined now by Andrew Riley, who is with Unite Oregon, which is an organization that works with immigrants, refugees across the state of Oregon. And maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your organization and how you're dealing with this current COVID-19 crisis in the state.
Absolutely. So I think you did a great job of describing us. Unite Oregon is a statewide social justice organization. We organize immigrants, refugees, asylum seekers, U.S.-born people of color, and working-class folks of all backgrounds in urban and rural areas to try and build a unified movement for intercultural justice. And I would say that the biggest impact for us is that we have been shifting all of our work to focus on coronavirus response, right? We had a lot of projects that we were working on, a lot of assumptions about campaigns that we were going to engage in, and a lot of that has been put on hold so that we can address the really significant needs that exist in our communities. What we've heard from our members is that folks are hungry, folks are, losing hours at work, or they're losing their jobs entirely, they're having trouble, making rent, even with a rent moratorium, and so folks are really struggling out there just to meet their basic needs.
And how is this particularly impacting the immigrant and refugee community in ways that it's not impacting people who aren't experiencing those issues? Maybe people that aren't familiar with the fact that people can't get unemployment, for example, or can't get some of the benefits even though they've paid into the system.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say before I get into that, one of the things I will say is that language access has been a really big issue for our folks, right? When local governments, the state government are putting out information about coronavirus, about public health measures, about the stay-at-home order, about relief programs, By and large, those communications are going out in English. And so if you are someone who has limited proficiency in English, that information is inaccessible to you. So one of the things we've been working on and one of the challenges we've had is making sure that governments are putting out that information in as many languages as possible. And where, you know, local government or state government will not do that, we work with a network of interpreters and community members to do that ourselves, so that the community is getting the information. But beyond that, I think you hit the nail on the head. For a lot of immigrant families, folks are ineligible for these relief programs, right? And so one example is the $1,200 payments that went out under the CARES Act. There's a provision in that law that is true of a lot of different federal laws, which says that so-called mixed status families, that is a family where a member is undocumented or otherwise filed taxes without a Social Security number, every member of the family is ineligible. So if you have a family of, you know, 8 U.S. citizens and 1 undocumented person, every member of that family, regardless of their citizenship, is ineligible for those relief programs because of federal exclusion based on immigration status. Our folks are in the same crisis that a lot of folks are facing. You know, we're already living in situations of precarity, but can't access a lot of those relief programs. The other challenge is, you know, we have a lot of members of our community who are not working as W-2 employees, right? They might be working as independent contractors, might be working in agriculture, working in fields where it's not as easy as just filing unemployment because you're not considered to be a regular employee. So there's been a really significant challenge in that, you know, our communities, again, are already living paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth, and the relief programs that have come up in the wake of coronavirus have still excluded vast swaths of the community.
And has Unite Oregon been part of the advocacy effort calling for rent relief and mortgage relief for people throughout this crisis, that then the rent wouldn't have to then pile up and be paid at the end of the crisis when it's over?
Yes, we strongly support rent forgiveness and mortgage relief. The big fear that we had is that if you just put a moratorium in place for the duration of the emergency, as you said, people are still racking up rent and utility bills. And so in 3 months, in 6 months, in 9 months, when the state of emergency lifts, you're going to have a whole bunch of folks who have enormous rent bills, enormous utility bills due fairly quickly to their landlord, even if you can't charge late fees, et cetera. And it's not clear that, you know, folks are going to have any way to pay those, notwithstanding the fact that folks are losing their jobs, they're losing hours, and you have this sort of threat of long-term economic consequences. You know, we don't want to see a situation where 6 months from now, we're able to lift the state of emergency because, you know, the immediate crisis of coronavirus has passed, and then we see an immediate wave of evictions, a mass spike in homelessness, and people living in really precarious situations because their rent came due all of a sudden. So, you know, we strongly support rent forgiveness. Understand in a lot of cases for homeowners as well.
And are you seeing people who are facing eviction despite the governor's moratorium on evictions?
Yes, that is something we have encountered basically from the first day that the moratorium was declared. We actually had a member of the community in Beaverton. I will not share a whole bunch of details about her because she is undocumented, but did receive an eviction. It wasn't an eviction notice, but it was a threat and strong recommendation that she look for other housing if she wasn't able to immediately pay half of her rent. And so we were able to work with her to write a letter to her landlord to invoke that moratorium. But there are a lot of folks in the community that we know are still having landlords tell them, you know, we need you to pay rent, still threatening, you know, folks with evictions. And again, unless the community is getting this information in, you know, formats and in languages that are most relevant to them, a lot of folks may just not know that there is a moratorium in place, or they may not know how to invoke their right to remain in their homes during the crisis. It's been a really serious issue, and we have spent a lot of time working with folks to try and teach them about their rights and help them invoke them.
And another issue that we've heard about, I mean, you mentioned that there is a lack of language access to information, is the lack of interpreters in healthcare settings and in other settings that allow people to actually get access to the information they need in a language that they understand, because healthcare interpreters and interpreters in a lot of areas are currently out of work and are not being provided with the way to do the interpreting that they generally do for people. How is that impacting the immigrant and refugee community? And I know a lot of people in that community also work as interpreters and translators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I think you're absolutely right about all that. That, you know, we have a lot of folks in the community who do work as interpreters. They do work as translators, and that. And I want to be really clear that that's not just linguistic, right? It's not just people who are taking one language and, you know, translating it or interpreting it to another. These are also folks who are serving as advocates for the patients from the community with the medical system, right? They're folks who have a personal relationship, who are getting very privileged information about these patients, about members of our community, and who are in a lot of ways really called on to advocate for them in that setting. And so, you know, interpreters, translators, they do incredibly good work. It's an incredibly complex job that has a lot of different moving pieces. And it's hard for some members of our community to access interpretation in the best of times, let alone when everyone is shifting to telemedicine for routine appointments. And then even that, right, you know, we've got members of the community who may be sick, right? They may be experiencing some sort of health challenge, but they don't know whether or not they should make an appointment with their doctor, right? Is this a priority enough that in the age of COVID, I need to make this appointment? And there's not necessarily the assistance there to help folks make that decision even before they enter the sort of point where they would get an interpreter, you know, where interpreters are available.
And what are some of the actions that Unite Oregon is taking? Are there legislative actions? Are there ways that people can get involved to challenge some of the injustices, and especially people not getting payments just because of the mixed status families and other things that people are experiencing? How can people get involved as activists or as supporters?
That's a great question. I would say, first of all, if there are folks who are in a position where they have financial resources that they can contribute, we have just launched a COVID-19 immigrant and refugee support fund that will be, basically, we will be working with our members, with organizers on the ground in Multnomah County, Washington County, and Jackson County in Southern Oregon to make sure that folks who are ineligible for these other programs are still getting the assistance that they need. And so if folks are in a financial position to be able to give, you can find information about that at the very top of our website, uniteoregon.org. I would also ask folks to stay tuned for, you know, any rapid response requests that come out. You know, a lot of our work, as I said, has been advocating at the local and the state level to increase language access, to create programs to support people who are ineligible for federal relief. And so we've had some pretty good luck with that so far. I think a lot of local officials have been pretty receptive, but there may be a time when we need to, you know, get a little more direct, or where we may need to rally the community in support. And so I would just ask folks to stay tuned to our website, to our email newsletter for any, you know, any updates, any opportunities to get involved there.
So if people have received a stimulus fund but are working and don't actually need it, maybe contribute some of that to someone who hasn't received one but really needs it.
Exactly, yeah. We think that this is a really good opportunity for a lot of folks who would like to be allies to our communities to really, you know, if you are in a position to do so, if you yourself are still employed, if you do have the resources to do so, please consider giving to the COVID-19 fund. That's going to help us, among other things, help folks buy groceries, help folks stay in their homes, right? And it's going to go to a very direct kind of material support for people in need. So the community needs your help now more than ever, so please consider giving it.
Again, that website is uniteoregon.org. We'll have a link to it on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, in the section about the Giving Tuesday special. It is a Giving Tuesday now, a special day calling for support for nonprofits who, like many others across the country, are struggling dealing with this coronavirus. How is Unite Oregon as an organization dealing with it? Are your staff now working from home? Are you having any hours that you're available in office for immigrants and refugees? Do you have a phone number that people call? How's the organization working now?
All staff are right now working remotely from home. One of the reasons for that is, you know, when we think of people who have a lot of contact with the community and who themselves are at special risk, I would put community organizers in that category, right? Talking to many different members of the community in different settings. We want to make sure that we're keeping our organizers safe, in part because we also know that many members of our community may have, you know, complicating health conditions, may put them in a position where they are especially at risk for serious complications as a result of COVID. So we have moved all of our operations to working remotely. We have started doing trainings and workshops in digital format. Each of our organizers is doing something a little bit differently based on the communities that they work with. We've got one colleague who's been working with parents in the David Douglas School District and been doing phone conferences. We've got others who have been doing video conferences online, really trying to meet that need. And then there's a lot of working the phones, right? Calling our members directly, checking in with community leaders about what they're hearing from their folks and what have you. So if somebody is in the community and needs to access our support, the first stop is going to be the website, uniteoregon.org. If you prefer to call us, you can also call us at 503-287-4117. Be sure to pick an extension or leave a message, and then that'll get routed to the correct staff member who will generally follow up as quickly as possible.
Again, I want to thank you for joining us on KBOO. And is there anything that you'd like to add, Andrew?
No, I would just say that, you know, Unite Oregon and a lot of different groups, I'll call out folks like Verde, Voice Workers' Rights Education Project, and others, need your support. Even in the best of times, we are working to meet incredible needs in our community without a whole lot of resources. We're punching way above our weight, and we've had to do even more of that in the age of COVID. So if there is any way you can give your time, your energy, your support to organizations like ours, this is the time. We need it like we never needed it before.
Well, thanks so much. Again, I've been speaking with Andrew Riley, who is with Unite Oregon. Their website, again, uniteoregon.org, supporting the immigrant and refugee community.
You've been listening to a special program on Giving Tuesday Now. You can hear the audio from this show, as well as links to all the community organizations at kboo.fm/givingtuesdaynow. We got to hear from Street Roots, VOES Workers' Rights and Education Project, APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, Unite Oregon, a group working with immigrants and refugees across the state, and the Municipal Eco-Resiliency Project, working for food justice and sovereignty. Thanks for listening to the KBOO special program, Giving Tuesday Now. And remember, KBOO is itself a nonprofit that needs community support to stay strong in these pandemic times. Today, we're raising funds to make up for having had to cancel our spring membership drive. If you donate online at kboo.fm today, your donation will be matched up to $20,000. So please, go to our website and support this community radio station, kboo.fm. Thank you. The music you heard this hour was from Victor Jara, Manifiesto, and Black Uhuru, Solidarity. Ahí donde llega todo, y donde todo.